Sandy Clough on Demand is brought to you by First Bank.
It's the great Sandy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
And once more, as we start at 9 o'clock straight up on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, it's great to be with you on this Wednesday night, 24th day of January 2018. We will be at the Super Bowl at this time next week, obviously, for sure. We will be there on Tuesday and on Monday as well. Coverage throughout the week of Super Bowl 52 right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. We look forward to that. Lots going on at the Senior Bowl. We'll hear some of John Elway's comments made today from Mobile, Alabama. And we'll pass along at the top here before we get to Dr. Rick Perea, who will be joining us here in studio about 10, 12 minutes from now. A little vignette, and we'll give Nikki Javala of the Denver Post credit for posting the video earlier today. And it involved Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen, the two star quarterbacks who will be practicing and have practiced at the Senior Bowl this week for the North squad, coached by the Denver Broncos staff, headed up by Vance Joseph. And the drill that Nikki captures today on video involves both quarterbacks on the move from side to side. And it's simply a matter of hitting a fairly large size net with three pockets implanted in the net. One is smaller, one is a little larger, and one is largest of all. And as the two quarterbacks go through this drill, insofar as Nikki Javala of the Post is able to capture one sequence, we see Baker Mayfield hit one of the pockets while he is moving from side to side and more or less releasing on the move. Looks like his footwork is good. His motion is solid and accuracy is good. Hits one of the pockets. Doesn't hit the net. Hits one of the pockets and planted in the net. And again, the net's about 10 yards away. Josh Allen follows. And as he moves and throws, he misses the entire net. I'm not saying he misses any one or all three of the pockets. He throws the pass toward a net standing 10 yards away, and he misses the net. He throws over it. He doesn't even hit the crossbar. I think Paxton Lynch would have at least hit the crossbar and probably hit the net if he didn't manage to throw into any one of the three pockets. So the reputation for inaccuracy that Josh Allen has developed for his 2 years at Wyoming, completing only about 56% of his passes, certainly has been reinforced this week during the two major practice sessions at the Senior Bowl. They'll go with a lighter workout tomorrow, a walkthrough on Friday, and of course play the game on Saturday. Mayfield has looked better than Allen. He has been the best quarterback from all indications from our hosts, reporters who are on the scene, cast of thousands seemingly at the Senior Bowl, watching this week, especially from Denver. And I don't think that video does anything to contradict what you've generally heard from hosts who are in Mobile this week on our airwaves talking about these two quarterbacks. But more and more, you're hearing and sensing from the Broncos an idea that, as far as this head coach is concerned, and these new assistant coaches are concerned, mainly on the offensive side of the ball, maybe the answer to Denver's offensive woes, which have been ongoing for roughly the last 3.5 years, doesn't necessarily involve taking a quarterback, solving those problems. Doesn't necessarily involve taking a quarterback with a 5th overall pick in the first round. And although the Broncos will not say this explicitly, we spoke on this subject with Sean Salisbury last night at roughly this time. And we asked Salisbury about how plausible it might be in his mind that Case Keenum, one of 3 Minnesota Viking free agent quarterbacks, including Sam Bradford, Teddy Bridgewater, and of course Keenum, as a free agent, based on the idea, perhaps reinforced by Sunday's performance in Philadelphia, the Vikings really, really like Teddy Bridgewater and are looking for any reason, whether it be a bad game in the regular season, which never really happened for Case Keenum. He played very well in the regular season for the Vikings as they strolled to the division title in the NFC North. But waiting for him to produce in the manner that you would expect from a 29-year-old journeyman quarterback who has played in 4 different cities with 3 different teams going back to his first year of action in 2013. So that covers a 5-year period. 38 starts, even with this year's numbers thrown in, completing less than 62% of his passes, a touchdown to interception ratio of 46-27, averaging 7 yards per attempt, and developing a passer rating of 86.0. Now, to Bronco fans, that might look really good. To Viking fans, the regular season Case Keenum looked very good. The playoff quarterback against New Orleans looked good enough to win that game and get the last shot in, however fortuitous it was. Keenum still had to throw the ball, and he was under pressure. But on Sunday against Philadelphia, the Vikings as a team fell apart, and yes, that included Case Keenum. So the idea that the Vikings would bring him back, what'd they get him for this year? Was it something like $2 million, I think, is what they signed him for back in April of 2017. That they would pay him 10 times that amount on a per-year basis to keep him seems unlikely. And they do like Teddy Bridgewater. Now, Bridgewater was coming off a horrific injury this year, and they were probably right in sticking with Keenum, although it took until December for Keenum to even get any semblance of a vote of confidence from head coach Mike Zimmer. It seems the Viking organization, Mike Zimmer, Pat Shurmur, a Keenum advocate, gone now. He'll be the head coach of the Giants this coming season. Rick Spielman, the general manager, has done a terrific job in Minnesota. They like Teddy Bridgewater. They might offer a deal to Case Keenum to stay and compete for the job, but Keenum has to know that they like Teddy Bridgewater. The Broncos could offer Keenum more. And remember, when Case Keenum came into the league as an undrafted free agent in 2012, the coach who brought him in to the Houston Texans camp at that time was Gary Kubiak, who right now has increasing influence with the Broncos. The point being that there are stronger indications than ever that the Broncos will take Case Keenum in free agency and draft on the first round someone else, a player that we have touted and talked about for months now. I happen to think is the best player available in this draft. Regardless of position, he's the best player. How about the idea? And we'll talk about it in the next hour at length. The Broncos signing Case Keenum in free agency, drafting a quarterback but not in the first round, and instead doing whatever it takes, moving mountains if that's what's required, to draft Saquon Barkley, the running back from Penn State. We'll leave you with that thought. We'll get to Dr. Rick Perea, who will be joining us in studio momentarily, right here, because there's never an offseason for talking Broncos on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Great Sandy Clough.
Always a pleasure to welcome, especially in studio, the good Dr. Rick Perea, the sports psychologist of much renown, much travel these days. Ordinarily, for football people, apart from the Senior Bowl and the Combine, these 2 months are quiet months in the National Football League.
Yes.
And there's the Super Bowl, of course, but that only involves two teams out of 32.
Right.
For you, it is not a quiet time. Why is that?
Well, because now is the time when we begin to assess the players coming up for the draft. We begin to look at them from the neck up, which is my work, the mental side of the game, but also how that plays into their overall performance. So it's really a busy time for me. I start gearing up with my personality assessments and determining which players we're going to assess and how much in depth we're going to assess them. So it's actually a very busy time. Trust me, Sandy, I'd much rather be involved in the playoffs, in the Super Bowl with our team. That's really what I'd rather be doing. But since we're not qualified to be in the playoffs this year, doing this mental side of really assessing people from the neck up is really where we have value.
20 out of 32 teams in the NFL annually do not make the playoffs. How much of a leg up do they get on playoff qualifying teams and especially on the Super Bowl teams by having free and open access to, for example, this week, the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, I think there is a leg up, to be honest with you, because not only is assessing college talent, but determining the culture of your own organization. Like what for us, like what could we have done better? What could we have been more proficient with in terms of coaching, in terms of the player personnel, in terms of how we set our climate and culture every day? So we're able to get a leg up, establish some of that personnel changes, not only football wise, but sometimes on coaching staffs. That can take place quicker. People get in place and they get set. And so it's really a leg up. It's not the leg up you want, but we'll take it.
Vance Joseph has been very honest and very clear in saying this week, with the Bronco staff involved, the largely reassembled Bronco coaching staff at the Senior Bowl, that he considers that a major advantage, and coaching the North squad with Allen and Mayfield, the two quarterbacks, specifically with quarterbacks. You know Vance pretty well.
Yes.
He was pretty emphatic yesterday on that point. This is a big edge. You get to see guys on the practice field for two intense days yesterday and today, and you get to see them in the meeting rooms, and
right.
He made a big point about that. How valuable is the Senior Bowl? I think you've been there in the past.
Yeah, absolutely.
How valuable is the Senior Bowl as an evaluation tool, or is it nothing more really than allowing the coaches to catch up to the scouts who have been watching these players throughout the fall?
It's very valuable, but here's my proposition. It's only valuable if you know how to use that data. Okay, so the information that you get, if you're coaching some of these players, especially quarterbacks, you get to see their decision-making process. You can get to see how they handle and communicate with other players. That's a distinct advantage. But you know what, Sandy, having been around NFL coaches for a number of years now, I know that some coaches take that information and run with it. Some people take that information and analyze it. Some people take that information and do nothing with it. So it depends on the particular coach. Some coaches are very analytical. They're very intricate in the way they approach the mental side of the game as well as the physiological side of the game. So I've been around coaches that take a huge piece of data from the Senior Bowl and they use it to their advantage. And I've been around other coaches. Quite honestly, it's a social gathering for them. So it depends on the particular coach.
With respect to these two quarterbacks that Vance Joseph and his Broncos staff will be coaching, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield. Do you make any definitive sort of evaluation, identify points of separation between those two guys on the basis of what you see this week? Or is this just simply a starting point rather than a foundational period for evaluation?
I think it's a starting point, but you can also see things that can lead you to identify markers. And what I mean by markers is somebody who says or performs in a particular way that gets your attention that really sets them apart. And so then that can lead you down the road of investigating that more. So for example, if we see a player that tends to not handle anxiety very well, or they don't get along with other players as well, then we'll put a marker on that player and we'll say, okay, we need to give them a personality assessment that's specific to how they regulate anxiety, because we need to know more about them. You know, I don't have to bring up anyone more than Jamarcus Russell in 2006 when we talk about, you know, a player from the neck down that was just had all the tools, but from the neck up was unable to regulate himself and get himself in a great spot for success. Don't want to have another Jamarcus Russell, and teams will do whatever they can not to do that. So there are markers that they'll set, but it's just the beginning of the process.
Do you check off people at the Senior Bowl? Can people be such bad actors at the Senior Bowl that you would check them off?
I wouldn't check them off, but I would start to, I would raise a white flag, not a red flag. A red flag is really when we say, okay, this is where we're going to move in another direction. But a white flag, yes, it's a concern. This is what we're concerned about. Let's look at it a little bit more in depth.
These four quarterbacks in this draft that everybody talks about, Rosen, Darnold, Allen, Mayfield, at least three of the four have been talked about as potentially number one overall picks. Knowing that going in, do you watch? You can't watch Rosen and Darnold, obviously, this week. But do you watch for Allen, who is the only one of the four who I guess has openly expressed a desire to play for the Cleveland Browns? The other three, at least two of them, don't seem to be as thrilled with the prospect. Is that a good thing as you look at it from the outside as far as Allen is concerned, saying, hey, I want to be the number one overall pick, and I wouldn't mind at all if it was Cleveland? Imagine what could happen if I was part of the turnaround in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I'm embracing that. Is that a good move from your standpoint for Allen to have made when Darnold and Rosen seem to be more reluctant about that prospect?
Yeah, I like that, because to me it shows that he has self-efficacy. Self-efficacy is a term we use in psychology that means your belief system. How much you believe in yourself. When you are confident enough to say, hey, I wouldn't mind being the number one pick, and if it's Cleveland, I want to be part of that turnaround. I don't think it's a secret that, you know, Hugh has done a good job in working with quarterbacks. You know,
through the years.
And, you know, they got Zampezi's there, who does a great job. Kenny Zampezi, who does a great job with quarterbacks. So these guys do their homework. Their agents do their homework. They know where they're going. Cleveland's not a bad place to go for a quarterback right now.
They got Todd Haley, I think, as their offensive coordinator. They just hired Todd Haley.
Right. So these people do their homework. So Cleveland is not a bad place. But I love the belief system with a quarterback, the self-efficacy. You know, that's what's lacking with so many quarterbacks that we haven't measured in the past. You know, they'll have everything from the neck down, but then they don't have that belief system in their self, that true belief system. And then people wonder why they're not a success in the NFL.
Mayfield was in the news recently, and I'm sure you got wind of this when he went on, I guess, Instagram, and perhaps in collaboration with Kenny Stills, who's an old friend from Oklahoma, voiced a distinct preference for the Miami Dolphins.
Yes.
What did you read into that, again, from your position working with the Dolphins?
Well, to me, Sandy,
it's
nothing more than Kenny being Kenny. Kenny is a very charismatic kid. You know,
Kenny Stills.
Yeah, our receiver. Very charismatic guy, connects with a lot of people. He's a great, great human being. So, you know, Kenny's being Kenny, and I'm sure, you know, that it got a few laughs. But, you know, it's way too early in the process to even have any insight into that. You know, he's a great competitor. I've seen him from afar. Haven't had much dealing with him. But, you know, you want to have competitors like that on your team. So from that perspective, I mean, you know, we have open eyes.
Senior Bowl versus Combine, which is the better scouting tool, or from Rick's perspective, the psychological aspect. Can you get more out of the combine as opposed to the Senior Bowl? Different views on that. We'll get Rick's coming next. Dr. Rick Perea in studio on this Wednesday night in the Mile High City on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, where there's never an off season for talking Broncos.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Great Sandy Clough.
Dr. Rick Perea, our guest in studio, and it's always a pleasure. You are back more or less by popular demand, I'll have you know, because a lot of people have been wondering since the regular season ended how the Broncos should approach this offseason. It starts with our coaching staff at the Senior Bowl, and they're getting, from all indications, the three best quarterbacks on their North squad in Mayfield, Allen, and Falk. From your standpoint, though, is the combine a better tool for overall evaluation than the Senior Bowl might be?
Well, I think you can separate them. I think the Senior Bowl is a great forum for evaluating the physiological competencies, their ability to play football. You know, you get to see them up close, you get to see them in drills, you get to coach them, you get to be around them. So you're going to see...
It's a good coaching tool because the scouts have watched these guys throughout the fall. Now the coaches get to catch up and either contradict or affirm what their scouts have told them.
Right. And, you know, it's a good... It's an intimate situation. You can get close to them. You can talk to them. But, you know, the combine is a real specified, you know, forum to be able to collect data. You know, you have the physiological collection during the day. And, you know, Sandy, I don't think enough people realize what goes on from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. every night. And that's
where the stories are.
That's where the stories are. That's where the brain meets the road, for example. So, you know, from 6 to 11, we're all in a room. Each team gets a room, and we get 15-minute slots where we can bring in players of our choice to interview for 15 minutes. And then the next one, 15 minutes. So for me, the data that I collect, nonverbal communication, verbal communication, you know, their belief systems, their self-efficacy, that is done at the combine, 6 to 11 every night. And it's very specified, it's very intense, and it really helps give us a leg up. So when we want to bring in our top 30, which happens after the combine, we bring in our top 30 prior to the draft, we can really hone in on the kids that we're looking at, you know, drafting, and then some of the top free agents that are probably going to be available right after the draft. So the combine is very specified in that data collection process. But I wish the average fan would have more of a window into how we do that interview process, because it's fascinating.
And as you say, it's at night, and ESPN, the NFL Network, they're all over the, 8 a.m., 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. stuff.
Right.
Not nearly as rigorous. And obviously they can't get inside the rooms, but they're not as rigorous in pursuing stories that pertain to those 5 hours at night. And you've said in the past you think they should be, and you think there is a way without getting in the way of teams that at that point can ask just about anything, right?
Right. You bet. Well, you know what to me, what one of those networks need to do is they need to film a segment, go in the room during the day when nobody's in there. Because I use those rooms, by the way, because I do work with coaches throughout the league, and I meet coaches in those rooms. So they're not being used. They could go in and film and show, here's what the room looks like, here's where the player sits, here's where the GM, the head coach, here's where team psychologist, whoever's in that room, here's where they sit, and this is when they get to ask them in-depth questions. Just to give people a shell of what we do. Of course, they can't come in as we do it and know what kind of questions we use, but they will at least have an insight to understand we're not just evaluating these guys from the neck down. And in fact, Sandy, I think, and I'm biased when I say this, the most important part is to evaluate them from the neck up.
You've had some coaching changes in Miami. They've had a lot of coaching changes here in Denver. During this process, whether it's Senior Bowl or Combine in a little more than a month, how much is a head coach looking to see how his assistant coaches interact? They say they want more of a teaching staff here in Denver. Mm. How much of a chance do you get to watch that over really only two heavy practice days at the Senior Bowl Vance Joseph is watching players, but I imagine he's also watching and attempting to do what he's acknowledged he didn't do as well last year, coaching the coaches. He's in on that at the Senior Bowl. He's watching his coaches, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, head coaches, one of their jobs is to really be leaders of their coaches. And like Vance said, coach the coaches. And so that's a focal point. And you're always trying to build cohesion. Task cohesion means everybody does their job. Social cohesion means people connect. So these are just two more opportunities for coaches to be together in that situation. And oh, by the way, you know, they can bond too off the field. You know, that's very famous at the Senior Bowl to go around and have fun a little bit. So the coaches get together and have that social cohesion. But yeah, it's always an opportunity, especially when your coaching staff changes. Because, you know, personnel on teams, whether it's players or coaches, those dynamics change, and they change your team, hopefully for the better. I mean, that's why you bring in new coaches to improve, bring in new players for the better. But yeah, you're always looking for that opportunity to build that task and social cohesion within your staff and in your players.
Let's talk about, we mentioned earlier, the 20 out of 32 teams that don't make the playoffs. Let's talk about the 12 teams that did, and specifically, of course, about the two teams that will be playing in the Super Bowl. It's been an interesting month. There was a fascinating piece on SI.com recently in the Monday Morning Quarterback section by Jenny Vrentis on the relationship longstanding between Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. And one keeps, in a sense, challenging the others. Saban just won his sixth national championship. Belichick is going after his sixth Super Bowl. Why is it that for another season we may be looking at Alabama as national champion, and quite probably New England as once again the Super Bowl champion for a third time in 4 years?
Because those two coaches understand culture better than any other two coaches around. They understand how important it is to get guys buying into their philosophy in football. It's not only talent. If you look at New England, for example, New England doesn't always, if you look at their receivers, they're not the tallest, they're not the fastest, they're not the most athletic, but they run their routes the way they're supposed to be run.
And they seem almost interchangeable.
They're interchangeable. They adhere to their role. Your role is you have to carry out what we do. They did that with LeGarrette Blount several years ago, getting him after Pittsburgh cut him, and nobody else wanted him. They defined his role, he accepted his role, and he became a Super Bowl champion. They are great at identifying people's roles, having their players accept those roles and adhere to those roles, and that's where most teams go awry. I've seen it time and time again, Sandy. People will not define roles. Coaches will not define roles. And then they won't make sure that the players adhere to their role. Or a coach doesn't adhere to their role. And if they don't adhere to their role, you're not going to have cohesion on the player level or the coach level. Those two coaches are able to understand that it's really the climate and culture that you set every year. And it's through leadership protocols. You know, those two coaches bring in people from the outside. Okay? And I got to tell you, they're the first ones to raise their hand and say, hey, how do I get better at this? How do I get better at that? You know what, Sandy? There's a lot of coaches in the NFL go, nah, I'm good. I've been coaching 20 years in this league. I know how to do this. Those two coaches are the first ones to raise their hand and ask for help. That says a lot in terms of their performance, in terms of their self-belief system. They don't feel threatened by outside authority, and they bring them in to help them make them better.
Asking for help is never a weakness.
Absolutely.
You've said that over and over again. And I have also taken note of the fact that, I don't know if it's every year, but in a great many years, the Patriots lead the league in college graduates. They lead the league in team captains coming from college. They look for that intelligence and leadership in the form of college graduates, number one in the league almost every year, team captains from college, number one in the league almost every year. Not necessarily the best players,
right,
but often the best leaders.
And what you're describing are neck-up competencies. They're not neck-down. Again, they're neck-up competencies that they look for. And it's very common. I mean, you know, Saban will be very consistent in the way they look at their recruiting process. They go after the best and brightest players, but they also do a lot of work behind the scenes to make sure that player is good from the neck up, too, because they know that that's the player that's going to get them to the highest level by their commitment levels, their leadership, their ability to assimilate their leadership training, because their leadership training is the best there is out there. they make sure that they're competent from the neck up, not just the neck down. And very few coaches do that consistently like those two.
We'll talk about what's going on here locally a little bit when we come back with the Nuggets, maybe even with the Avalanche a little bit, and what a turnaround it has been for the Avalanche. We'll talk about that with Dr. Rick Perea as we continue on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.
It's the great Sandy Clough on Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.
Continuing now in studio with Dr. Rick Perea, Sandy Clough with you on this Wednesday night in the Mile High City. Always a pleasure to have the good doctor with us. Tell us a little bit before we go any further about DK2 Motivation.
Yeah, we have a organization here in Colorado, off I-25 and Arapahoe Road, where we work with performers. We work with athletes, high school level, college, professional level. And we basically help them from the neck up. But our facility also has a sensory deprivation tank. We train people's brains through computer programs. We do a lot of different things to help people be the best they can be. We work with first responders, surgeons, astronauts, anybody who's in a high-performing business. You know, I just got through doing presentations for a couple law firms here in Colorado, you know, because they got to perform, lawyers too. So we're just a performance organization that really pays attention to getting your mind right, getting your thoughts right. We're high on motivation, helping people get in the right spot for success every day.
I know you haven't been around the Avalanche a lot over the years, but I'm sure you've observed since coming back to town in the last few days that a team that was absolutely dreadful last year, won 22 games out of 82, has already this year won 27 and just completed a 10-game winning streak, which is the second longest in their history since moving to Colorado almost a quarter century ago. You have to believe that a lot of it is from the neck up.
Sure.
And that the coach has found the right psychological buttons to push. And not to make too fine a point of this, but it's remarkable. And Nathan MacKinnon talked about it quite openly in Montreal yesterday, that the culture changed when Matt Duchene was traded.
Yeah. And see, that tells me a lot. When a player leaves and the culture changes, that's not from the neck down. That's from the neck up. It's how people approach their job. It's, again, going back to that role adherence and role acceptance. Do you accept your role? Do you adhere to your role? And where teams go awry is that doesn't happen. And what's even worse is coaches don't even know how to really set that into motion. They just think, oh, okay, he's a great player. I just put him out on the ice. He's going to perform. No, they need to understand what you expect of him, clarify, and then they have a chance to adhere to it.
Jared Bednar, in answer to a question I posed to him on Saturday after they beat the Rangers for their ninth straight win, he took note of the fact, and he's talked about this a few times before, but he made a very clear point about how when mistakes are made during the game, unlike last year, when he would chew out a player, MacKinnon, on one occasion in particular, kind of waved him off, and Bednar, in what may have been, I think, his best coaching move of the year last year, at that point sat MacKinnon, said, all right, you waved me off, you're not going to play. For a period and a half, he didn't play him. This year, he talks about how, as a head coach, and even with his assistants on the bench, they don't always have to make the fault corrections. He says he can hear the players talking about that and holding themselves accountable during the game on the bench. How big is that?
That's huge. That, you know what that is, Sandy? That's a culture by design. You know, we often say, do you have a culture by default or do you have a culture by design? Teams need to design their culture. And when you are able to empower the players to have leadership roles within your team, that's a culture by design. Too many teams don't understand, and they have a culture by default, meaning that, okay, they put the players out there, they train them in the physiological process, but they don't design a culture. And you can design a culture from a GM's perspective, from an executive vice president's perspective, that we're going to have a culture of X, Y, and Z. And you literally have a methodology of how to do that. One of those is allowing players to have leadership roles within that team. Because I'll tell you this, you can have great leadership from the head coach, you can have great leadership from all the assistants, but if you don't have great leadership of people on the ice, you're not going to do it in crunch time. That's when you need those leaders on the ice that can carry that forward.
I want to talk about, speaking of upper management, Jeff Breidich with the Rockies. I know you have great respect for. And Tim Connelly and Arturis over with the Nuggets.
Sure.
You also feel have done very, very good jobs
yep.
for organizations that we all know haven't always been well run in the past.
Right. Yeah, I'll tell you what. Jeff is one of the most bright, cutting-edge, forward-thinking, culture-by-design guys I've been around in Major League Baseball. I love the things he does. He's always thinking of ways to get better. He's always being very
creative.
He's
done that here in the offseason, yeah. bringing in a couple of terrific relief pitchers, including Wade Davis,
yeah.
who was a closer on a World Series championship team.
Yeah, he's very
not
very
once,
creative.
But twice, two yeah. different teams.
Yeah, very creative, very forward-thinking. Arturis and Tim, they do a great job. They're always looking for ways to get better. So I think in terms of front office and those two teams, you got people who are designing a culture. And that, again, that's Sandy. I'm talking to there's probably less than 10% of professional coaches across the board, Major League Baseball, hockey, basketball, football, that design their culture. And you do have those here in Denver. You also have those with John Elway. John Elway does do that as well. So Denver's pretty fortunate. They do have people who design, have a culture by design. We have that in Miami. Yeah. We absolutely have a culture by design in Miami. But having been around the league, I can tell you this. Most teams have a culture by default. And when you have that, it's basically up to players making plays. And if they make them, great. If they don't, they don't. And that's when you see a high variability in performance. So...
And I want to get back to the Patriots for a second and close out on that, because it seems to be a foregone conclusion that win or lose at the Super Bowl, Matt Patricia is leaving, and you've been around Patricia a little bit,
yep.
to become the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Seems like a good fit. He's got a general manager, a former Patriot executive who wants to win. Ownership wants to win. They aren't satisfied with just being good. They've been good in recent years.
Right.
They've even been in the playoffs a couple of times. But when they went 9-7 this year and did not make the playoffs, they elected to make a coaching change, which may have been the most surprising, because people thought Jim Caldwell in 4 years, made the playoffs a couple of times, did a pretty good job. But they want to go for greatness, and
right.
they think Matt Patricia will bring them that. Josh McDaniels appears on his way to the Indianapolis Colts to become their new head coach following the Super Bowl. They've been together with Belichick as offensive coordinator, McDaniels, defensive coordinator, Patricia, for the last 6 years. Belichick's very adept at adapting. We
yep.
know that.
Yep.
But he's had great stability on his coaching staff, and now he's going to lose his two coordinators. What kind of effect do you think that will have, if any, on the Patriots?
I think it'll have a tremendous effect, because those two guys have done a great job at the micro approach. I mean, you got macro, which is the head coach. Micro yeah. are coordinators.
Yep.
The micro level, they've done a great job, X's and O's and executing. I mean, people don't understand, you know, your offensive coordinator prepares your game plan for the most part. Your defensive coordinator for the defense. Some teams, the head coach takes over, but in that team, he lets them prepare their game plans. Offense and defense. So they're going to lose a lot. Now, but let me say this, Andy. When you bring up Patricia, I want people to understand the skill set for a head coach and a coordinator are two different things. And I think some people think just because you're a great coordinator means you're going to be a great head coach. That isn't always the case. You know, when you're a head coach in the NFL, you got to be a CEO. You got to be able to be a macro leader. You got to be able to understand how to delegate and let go of some of that control. Not all coaches are able to do that. You see coaches that go become head coaches. They're head coach for 2-3 years, and then they're back into the system of being an assistant. So I wish Patricia the best. I can't predict his future, but if I were going to give him an advice, I would say, understand you're now a CEO. You now have to understand the macro approach, not just the micro.
How's McDaniels going to do 7.5 years after being fired?
I think he's going to do great, because I think he learned a lot of lessons back then. I think he's taken those lessons and he's parlayed those into who he is now as a coordinator. And I think he's going to understand that now he has to have the macro approach and understand he has to delegate. He can't, you know, he probably will still call plays. I imagine the first few years he'll want to have that kind of control, which I understand. But at the same time, he has got to be a leader of leaders. He's got to coach the coaches. He's got to help bring outside help in, just like Belichick has done, just like Saban has done, to help regulate and design that culture.
We'll let you run on this. Philadelphia have a chance at the Super Bowl?
Absolutely. Absolutely they have a chance. You know, Sandy, I've said this many times. I don't even care who the best team is. That doesn't matter. What matters is who plays the best on that one day. It's a one-game single elimination. Turnovers are going to play a huge role. How players play, how people regulate in the heat of the moment. If they keep it small and play football, I think they have a great chance.
Nick Foles, great story, isn't it?
Great story. Look at the guy. From the neck up, he's regulated himself.
Yes.
He's deployed who he's supposed to be. That's a perfect example of a player being who they're supposed to be on the biggest stage.
And a nice job by that entire coaching staff. We had Sean Salisbury on last night, and he said that's the most underrated coaching job in the NFL this year, Peterson and his staff in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. And so I would say it wouldn't surprise me if either team win. It's the team that's going to turn the ball over less. It's the team that plays the best on that day.
Great to see you.
Great
as
to see
always,
you, Sandy.
Especially
thank
here
you.
In studio.
Appreciate
we always
it.
Appreciate it. DK2 Motivation. And again, people can contact you very easily.
Easily. Just Google me. I'm out there, man. I'm out there having fun, helping people get better every day.
All right. We'll not see you, I don't think, at the Super Bowl next week. We'll have fun freezing in Minneapolis, and you'll stay warm down in Miami.
Absolutely. It'll be 78.
You're the
sunny.
Smart one. You're the smart one. Dr. Rick Perea in studio. Our second hour is right around the corner here on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.